It is Wednesday the 1st of June and this is episode 87 of Digital Outbox. Hello to another episode of, that wasn't a good start, was it? I'm a bit rusty, it's been a couple of weeks. But I am joined to help me along the way by Ian and Henry today, so hello to you both.
Hello.
Good evening. Just said, and welcome.
It's too late. The time has gone.
The moment has passed.
It has. I'm looking forward to this one. We've got some news. We wanted to crack on with another episode quite quickly because we know that next week is going to be busy. We've got Apple's event, their developer conference, and we've also got E3. So there's going to be loads of news. So we thought we'd get up to date before that happens and we can give ourselves a fresh run at it without trying to go over the hour mark. Hopefully.
Oh, let's go.
Let's go. So we're going to start with some updates to news stories that we've run in the past. And probably the most recent one was one we talked about last week, or you guys talked about last week. So do you want to take us through that, Ian?
This is just very quickly. We talked about Google Wallet. We mentioned PayPal, and they won't give up on the market share that they've got. And a couple of hours after we finished, PayPal sued Google, which was just class. But seemingly the guy who used to run a lot of the mobile payments in PayPal, Google was trying to do a deal with PayPal. And it fell through, and about a month later, they signed up the guy that who were having the discussions with. Right. And a few months later, Google launched a product. So PayPal are obviously feeling aggrieved. They feel that he's been recruited solely to steal, you know, their ideas and their you know, method of working. Because the negotiations, I mean, it wasn't just a few months. Google was negotiating with PayPal for 2 years.
Right, so my first statement on that fact would be, you've been negotiating for 2 years, why the hell hasn't it moved forward? They must have been throwing spanners in the work left, right and centre.
Absolutely.
So Google went for the money option. What's the easiest way to solve this?
Yes.
Let's chuck some money at it. In fact, let's chuck some money at one person, basically.
And I think Google are basically saying we can hire who we want. It's a free market.
Yeah, I mean, there are rules and regulations about what you can take from an intellectual point of view, I think.
Depends on contracts as well, lots of these high-up guys.
It depends what clauses people have signed in their contracts. But the fact that these three companies, they're so interrelated now, they're incestual as far as who they recruit. They just, you know, bounce from one company to another, even at the top levels, that this is going to turn into some sort of weird war again, involving lots of lawyers.
We cover it later on. Talking about Eric Schmidt, he had a really interesting press conference or talk earlier today at the D9 conference, and he said there's a gang of four now. So he sees it as Amazon, Apple, Google, and Facebook.
And I would agree with that. MS, Microsoft, not in there.
Who?
Micro who? I think he kind of said, are we covering it later? I haven't even looked further down. Yeah, so we'll cover it later then. Another update, Seesaw, which we highlighted, was an on-demand TV along the lines of the iPlayers and ITVs. It was trying to drag together all the content from across the sort of main terrestrial channels that we have in the UK and ping it out in one easy-to-digest place. But it has failed and it is going to shut. It couldn't cope. I guess it wasn't making money.
No.
Well, will you miss it?
for the one time I used it when it first got launched, I don't think so. No. It just shows how difficult it is to get into this market, though. Because I mean, they had the content, and they had an ad supported, you know, free version, and they had pay-per-view kind of content as well. They had the deals in place, but it just shows that it's just almost impossible to get a foothold now.
But it was harder to use. I mean, I found it harder to use than iPlayer. iPlayer was easier and better. So why would you go elsewhere?
Yeah, the actual owners of the content have got really a lot better at what they're offering now. So
absolutely. You know. I mean, if you look at iPlayer, I mean, the iPlayer's pointing you to ITV Player and Channel 4 and 5 services as well. you know, and it just all works for me. And we said when we reviewed, we talked about this in episode 37, many moons ago, and we said we couldn't see a reason to use it, and I think that's just played out.
Yep. So it's, you know, the its big selling point was it was all in one place, but the fact is that you had adverts then playing on BBC's content, which felt a bit uncomfortable, seeing as you could just go and watch it on the BBC site.
It was like watching Dave.
Yes, it's true. The online equivalent of Dave. Dave's done a bit better than they have, though, I feel. Flickr. We covered the story where they accidentally deleted a user's account and all his photos, which he was a bit peeved about, to say the least.
Well, particularly when it was a pro user who was actually giving them money.
Yes, and they couldn't sort of back out of it in any way. Apparently, they had gone for good. But they have now put in place a kind of catch-all. So 90 days can pass and you can still recover your pictures if you choose to delete your account or if they accidentally delete it.
Yes.
Okay. So basically that just means they've put in some backups and they've tested them. Well, maybe they've not tested them. It just means they've put in some backups for 90 days.
I just think it means there's an extra flag against the user. You know, it'll be like, you know, live, archive or deleted. You know, and it'll that's... You know, don't delete anything until we're absolutely sure.
Yeah, and 90 days is a good long period. Why can't Facebook do this? That's what I want to know. Never mind.
What do you mean that they won't?
They never delete anything.
They never do. Yeah, which is the opposite problem, really, isn't it? You know, have you ever tried to delete a Facebook account? Very, very difficult. Because if you check within the 14-day period, it automatically reactivates your account. Great.
But there's so many services now wanting you to log in via your Facebook. It's almost made it that you have to, you know, to use a lot of the Web 2.0 services or even iPhone apps, the first thing they say is, you know, log into Facebook.
As Mr. Schmidt said, the Facebook own your identity.
Yes.
Like it or not. Right, Lodsys responds to Apple.
Those mother... Go on.
That headline doesn't mean anything to me, so you better update me.
Oh, right. So Lodsys had these were the guys that were suing individual Apple developers. And Apple eventually turned around and said, do one. We've got we're licensed and we believe that because we're allowing the developers using our environment and we provide this functionality and we're licensed with you, back off. And everybody thought that was it. The next, I think it was 2 days later, Lodsys then started lodging similar claims with Android developers because their patent wasn't exclusively on the iOS platform. So they moved, and I think everybody then assumed they've moved on to Android because that's the next easy target. But yesterday, they actually sued 7 Apple developers. And what they've said is that if they're improperly targeting that developer, so if they lose in court and they found out that they've been wasting everybody's time, they'll give them $1,000.
So but they obviously then believe they have got some sort of patent.
They believe they've got a very strong case. Apple believe they don't.
Apple have the belief they've got a strong enough case that they're willing to pay. So it just depends whether the top level you can cover it.
I guess this is where it'll what's happened is Apple then responded and says, we believe these aren't correct, Lodsys, and we are asking you to remove these claims. But the claims were made to each individual Apple developer, each individual developers, not through Apple. So I don't know legally what Apple can do apart from saying, right, we'll fund your defence now.
It seems like the end game for Lodsys is that they would like Apple to cover the extra costs of each individual developer, basically. That's what it sounds like, or at least have a substantial
payment. Yeah, but I mean, the $1,000 as well is a bit of a publicity stunt anyway, isn't it? I mean, it's a absolutely drop in the bucket compared to anything that these guys will have to pay for the defence anyway, whether they win or lose.
I don't know. I mean, surely won't it be a small claims thing?
What Lodsys has said is that they're chasing after, and it was some silly point, you know, something percent, you know, so in £1 million it works out to, you know, $4,000 or $5,000. So everybody thinks, oh, it's not that much they're chasing.
Yeah, but when you're talking about the Apple,
but if you're looking at some of the, they're chasing after Icon Factory, and I'm not saying they've made £1 million in sales, I've got no idea how much they've made in sales, but they're a very well established company, but still small. And the thing is, that's the current rate. Who's to say that they don't turn around a year's time like Apple or Google and say, well, we're changing the terms and conditions. It's now 10% we want. There's no guarantee.
No, there's no guarantee, but it sounds like they're being sensible in that they're not, you know, they're not making this ridiculous. They're actually going for a slice that they think they can get hold of.
I think they've been absolute scum.
Well, and you're probably right, but that's what people, if they believe they've got a legitimate claim, and clearly they've got some sort of claim.
I meant to actually chase it up. There was a post just come out tonight. I think it was from Fred Wilson, who is actually now saying that patents and software is just killing the industry. It's killing innovation. It's just stopping people innovating, which I'm sure our own Henry Merriweather has been saying for a long time.
Yeah, we've been saying that, and I know lots of other people that believe that, yes, we should get rid of it in the software.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking, you know, it's software developers that are saying this. It's not people that aren't going to, that couldn't possibly benefit from it if they did come up with a patent, but it doesn't seem right to be able to patent business methods and software, just, you know, software, an algorithm effectively.
Yeah, software development never starts from scratch anymore. You know, the modern day development, you start from a platform, a basis, you use previously written code, and then you add on top of it, and that's how the innovation happens, when you add all these things together. I think the days of when you wrote a program from absolute scratch are well gone. So yeah, getting rid of patents is probably make things a lot more straightforward.
Yeah, it's Fred Wilson. Enough is enough is his post. Just posted today. I believe that software patents should not exist. They're taxing innovation, and software is closer to media than it is to hardware. Patenting software is like patenting music. And he goes on, and it's had 316 comments. So go to www.avc.com. So obviously that's kicked up a bit of a storm today.
Yeah, I'm sure there are developers on both sides of that. But you know, there's plenty of countries out there that don't follow the same rules anyway, so they can quite happily reverse engineer and hack away to their own satisfaction.
Aye.
Right. So all the excitement over having some sort of malware on Apple, they've responded.
There's two different responses. So they're talking about the next OS X update will have some specific removal tools for getting rid of the Mac Defender malware. But there was a security update yesterday that will identify and remove Mac Defender. It'll update. It will also identify variants of it, and it will also update daily to tackle new variants.
So what's Mac Defender doing? I missed out on that bit. What's it actually doing to your Mac?
It's basically they've done some very clever. It's almost like a clever social hack.
Yeah, it's
done.
A social engineering hack, definitely.
They have made themselves appear very high up in Google rankings, and it's because a lot of the advice. I mean, I was watching one of the Leo Report podcasts, and he usually says to people, "If in doubt, Google it." And you'll find out straight away if something's good or bad. And because it's appeared in a lot of the Google rankings, people are assuming this is good software. And also, there is a piece of legit Mac software called Mac Defender as well. I think it was a Google Images hack that they have done. So you're looking for an image, and it was spawning off this. You need to download Mac Defender. There's some stuff on your Mac and all that kind of the usual kind of, you know, you should scan your machine.
But what was the actual malware doing? Was it stealing stuff?
It asked for your credit card to purchase the software. Seemingly, right. It was also legitimately. It was, if you put in your details accurately, it was saying these are wrong. Please use another credit card, and hence gathering two or three or four credit cards.
Lovely.
From people. And also, once it was installed, it was starting to spew up the usual porn adverts, all that kind of good stuff. So I just did. A fairly typical bit of malware, but it seems to have caught out a lot of Mac users who don't have anything running in particular to stop this.
Yeah, aren't really used to it, and have bought a Mac on the basis that it's safe and secure. You know,
like you were saying last week, it's you can hardly say one is anything like 100,000 per hour or whatever it was.
No, but it's always been in the cards.
Yeah.
The fact that
it's on the cards and it hasn't actually happened still is pretty strong evidence that it's they've
I'm
done
still
a good
amazed.
Job.
I'm still amazed it hasn't really happened, to be honest.
Yep. Yeah, I bought my first Mac in January 2006, and I've been kind of waiting for this since then. So,
yeah,
5 years.
I'm the same. I mean, I can be, I think somebody can quite rightly probably say, "Ah, you're being smug. You've got nothing running." But I've never had to run anything. You know, that's the kind of truth.
Okay, so that was all. That's the updates to the stories. We are now going on to new news.
You mean news?
Yeah, that'd be it.
Yeah, is that maybe why we call it news, because it's new?
I never realised it was called news until, well worked out.
Right, so Twitter basically have handed over a user's data because someone in the UK went, or a local authority in the UK went to sue, or went to get that data from them in California. Hang on, I'm getting that all mixed up, but there you go. Somewhere in what I just said is about that story.
Yes, South Tyneside Council went to California and asked for a Twitter user to be identified.
Now, this Twitter user had been posting libelous statements on Twitter.
Allegedly.
Well, that some user had been posting libelous statements. Well,
I think the Twitter user has been, and the name that has now been handed over to South Tyneside Council is a South Tyneside councillor.
Surprise, surprise. And probably not of the same party, I would imagine.
And he is denying this because seemingly it was two or three Twitter accounts that he was doing it from, and he's described the council's move as Orwellian.
Yeah, well, of course he is. He's been caught out, and he's probably having to, you know, take it on the chin, isn't he? And he hasn't.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's saying, "Oh, you know, they got in touch with me, and I only had 14 days to defend the case, and I was expected to fly 6,000 miles from hire my own lawyer, all at my own expense." Blah de blah de blah de blah. So he's been a bit, you know. Of course, the council have not disclosed the sum of money that they have paid in legal fees and that in taking this to court in the States.
And it can't be an insignificant amount of money. I get, you know, any time, you know, it's not just a matter of sending an email, is it?
Well, even if it is, if it's a lawyer, that costs you lots.
Yeah.
The best bit is, quote, "I don't fully understand it, but it all relates to my Twitter account. And it not only breaches my human rights, but it potentially breaches the human rights of anyone who has ever sent me a message on Twitter. Shut up."
Yeah, but exactly. This is my problem with all these stories recently. And I agree there's an element of, you know, is it attacking free speech on the internet? And yeah, sure, it's not free speech as we would understand the internet to have been up until now. But I think there's a lot of people that believe they are above the law just because you're online. And I think we kind of forget that that's not the case.
Absolutely.
You are responsible still for what you say and do when you are online. And it's the same with, you know, the breaching the, you know, the Twitter breaching the super injunctions.
Yes, but
whoever did that first, you know, they're taking the law into their own hands by doing it.
Yes, but
they probably deserve to be.
They do. But the other thing is, of course, that on the other side of the flip side of that coin is that the companies like Facebook and Twitter, if they're not taking users' privacy seriously to look after people's interests, then, you know, it's like, you know, why do people can say things which they wouldn't normally say just because it's online, you know, but surely there's part of the reason that they do that is because there's an expectation that is kind of looked after or not disclosed. So, you know, maybe these maybe part of the issue is also with Twitter and Facebook and the others and not just the individuals.
But
I think we always accepted, though, or assumed, I mean, and more so recently, that if there's ever a legal challenge and there's a legal basis for the release of that information, then sure, you know, they've got no choice. They say in their terms and conditions, if, you know, if we're required to by law to give over the information, we will.
But I guess, I mean, there's a number of different sides. I mean, to me, I'm all for freedom of speech. You know, and if you look at a lot of the things that happened in the Middle East over the last 6 months, if you know, if the Egyptian government could have went to Twitter and Facebook and said, "Shut down all these accounts," and they complied, a lot of what we saw wouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. A lot more people would have died. You know, a lot of you know, quite nasty things would have happened. And I think freedom of speech has to be allowed for these type of things. At the same time, freedom of speech doesn't mean that somebody can go online and, you know, spout anything they like And I guess something closer to home, certainly in Scotland, is the amount of people that took to Facebook and Twitter round about Neil Lennon and thought it was okay to, you know, put up Neil Lennon must die and here's his address and let's send bombs and bullets and let's do hate campaigns.
Yeah, but
to me, that's the type of people that's illegal. They should be, police should be able to go to Twitter, Facebook, whatever, find out who they are and jail them.
Yes, but I think part of the issue is the way that these social networks have kind of grown up, where people expect to just put out, you know, they put in the illegal stuff that you're just talking about, but they're also most of the time just putting out the complete inane nonsense about what they had for breakfast and how many times they've been to the toilet today, and that
Frosties and three times.
So you know those, and when there's no discrimination between the in the content, then we're going to have more and more of this kind of issue where people are not actually discriminating between what they're actually putting out there at all. So they are not saying, you know, this is important and this is nothing. It's just, it's all part of the same stream of consciousness.
And it's a really difficult thing to grapple with, isn't it? Especially as we're across borders and across countries where, you know, things are radically different.
Absolutely. But, there was another account, Twitter account, launched on Monday, which listed all 15 of the super injunctions. And everybody was saying, oh, who is it? But what if it's been done in the US? Now, you can go back to, I can't remember what year it was, you can go back to Spycatcher and everybody buying it around the world, but you couldn't buy it here. You know, the laws of our land only extend so far, unless you're American.
There's a big difference between someone just spouting nonsense on their own Twitter stream and someone, in this case, looks like this councillor, so was he allegedly, set up deliberately an account to...
Depends what he said.
And I guess we'll find out. I mean, but it sounds like he's been caught with his pants down and he's been a bit of a wally.
But see if he said something that's been fairly innocent. As in, you know, a certain councillor with a big nose is blah, 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 blah. You know,
it's not going to be that though, is it?
No, but if it has been something like that and they have went, you know, to all this way, you know, because it seemed like it was a previous council that started off the action, but the new council have agreed, the new people in charge have agreed that yes, we back that action and we should find out who it is. You don't know how much of it is it 10 years of infighting and it's just moved from the council rooms to Twitter?
It's all small fry. Bigger stage now. Okay, so Twitter have announced, I think it was today they announced it on their blog, that you can now search photos. So photos are becoming much, much more bigger part of the Twitter stream. And now you can search via hashtags for photos.
You can. The search has improved seemingly, so you can get more relevant tweets. And Twitter search has never been the best. I don't know if you guys use it at all.
Hardly ever use it.
No, not really.
The times I've tried it, I've been fairly disappointed. Really, it's easier to go to Google real time search and use it to search the current tweets. Excuse me. While I burp into the microphone.
Lovely.
Exactly. I'll share that with everybody. I'll hack it out. Don't worry. Which means I won't.
That's right. Did you tweet that though?
No, because I had to switch the phone off because your phone was making a noise and it made me paranoid. Oh, we're gonna fracture this week. I can tell. Where was it? Oh yeah, your search, but the search will now bring back relevant photos and videos, which it never did before. It just used to be like, you know, loads of tweets. And seemingly they've baked in photo uploads on the Twitter website. So instead of having to use a third-party service, you can now just upload a photo from twitter.com. They'll host it. So they're doing a lot more around photos.
I wonder how they're doing the search on these photos. Because is it the photo being brought back when it's got a hashtag associated with it? Or
I think so.
I was going to say, because you can't really tag it just by an algorithm, yep. Can you? So
I think it was all the metadata associated with it. So location and where it, you know, where it was posted from, and I guess time, and also the hashtag.
There we go.
So I guess if you're a third-party photo service, I think you might be struggling slightly.
I guess it depends how solid, whether you get the fail well all the time on these other services, you know, the other one. Okay, so Eric Schmidt has been talking at D9 and he sort of, I guess, talked quite frankly about Google and how it sees itself against its competitors.
Yes, sorry, I was leaning back thinking about other things.
Burps.
No, not that time. No, there was a search engine landed a post of the top 10 things that they mentioned, and I've kind of dropped a couple out. I mean, he was saying things like, if you want a secure, you know, computer at home, buy a Mac.
And, I think they've said before that most people at Google now use Macs.
Yeah,
it's very rare.
You know, so I don't think there was any surprise there. But I think the whole interview, and I've not watched it, but I want to, because it sounds like he was on just a very open and frank assessment of, you know, where Google are and his kind of time in charge.
Clearly being given the PR green light to say what he wanted.
Yes. So
is he not, though, allowed to say whatever he likes anyway, and then the PR guys just have to spin it afterwards? You know, I mean,
probably
he does employ the PR guys.
He does employ the PR guys. I bet they get paid a heck of a lot of money to make sure that whatever he says comes out the way that he meant it to.
To be honest, it's quite nice to hear someone talking quite frankly, because he quite openly said that he, you know, Google mucked up on not getting into the identity sphere and Facebook steal a march.
But it was the way he said it. He said, 4 years ago, I wrote memos on identity and did nothing. I clearly knew I had to do something and I failed to do it. He was asked why, and he says, I think I was busy. Yeah, and then he said, CEOs should take responsibility. I screwed up.
Yeah.
So it sounds, and whether it's as blunt as that or whether it was said with a big grin in his face and everybody laughing, you know, obviously changes the context of it.
Yeah, of course it does. But he also said during the speech that, he caveated it quite a lot, but he said that Bing does, you know, getting real answers straight away much better than Google.
Yep. No doubt Microsoft will go and buy a cake, or they'll carry around Google in a coffin like they did with the iOS phone all those years ago.
Yeah, and look how Balor, that worked for them.
Yeah, Balor, where are you now? Your days are numbered.
He's whooping in his office.
Yeah, or on the stage. You know, every time you think Microsoft are maybe just getting back on the horse again, and really, you know, maybe making a bit of progress, you know, go and have a look at that video.
Oh no, did you see I tweeted it up yesterday. Did you see I'm going to way off this topic, but did you see the Asus guys launching that phone pad thing? That is the best launch. See, when you think about how Apple launched something, or how now Google launched something, and you compare it to this, it was like me or you launching a product. It was class. In fact, I don't think we wouldn't have been that bad. it was really good. I'll put it in the show notes. In fact, that may be my pick this week, seeing I have no pick. Schmidt also did say, getting back to this, that they seem to have renewed the deal for Apple computers and iOS, so that Google Maps and Google Search are still the tools of choice.
I'm thinking they're probably getting quite a lot of money off that.
Oh, they must be.
Yeah.
Must be.
Because it's, you know, Apple being Apple will want the best service, and they still offer the best service by a margin.
Apart from,
they're willing to pay.
Apart from, we don't get the stunning maps that you get on Android.
Not yet.
Yeah, it's a bit, you know, it could be a year away, it could be 2 years away.
I'm just wondering whether that's an iOS 5 type thing that will get implemented. I'm sure it's just an implementation thing rather than a held back thing.
I hope so. It would be nice. One other thing that's quite interesting, Google had facial recognition technology, but it's uncomfortable with how it might be used, so it's withheld it.
Yeah, so they obviously think it's very powerful, or powerful enough to just identify everything on and everyone on the internet.
Can you imagine searching for you and it pulls back all the photos that haven't been tagged? It just knows that that's you, and here you are in all these different places.
And can you imagine all that data combined with everything else? I it's amazing that they have actually scaled back from it, because it doesn't sound like they...
Well, you guys have used... You must have used iPhoto.
Yep. And it doesn't work that well.
I've seen how it
doesn't work that well, the facial recognition thing, does it?
I thought it worked scarily well on some people.
Yeah.
You know, it actually got people through the year. I mean, this sounds creepy. I've got photos of Shaq from almost like school days, uni days, you know, early working days, and now. And he's changed quite a bit, and it got him on all of them. It was absolutely scary. And as you said, there are some others that's like, that's rubbish. But imagine you could just put your name in and pull back all your photos.
Yes, all the photos you didn't know existed anymore.
Well, I think, is that not quite a good thing to find out where all these photos are?
Well, I guess actually it's good, better to know they exist, I guess, yeah. Just as long as no one else does the same search, eh?
Do you not think, though, that these kind of things, it's actually quite, it's a bit concerning when, you know, Google saying, well, we've had this kind of technology, do you not... You know, surely, like the CIA or the MI5, or, you know, they've got boffins working away on this kind of thing as well.
There must be. The only thing I did think is that, blimmin' heck, Facebook definitely wouldn't feel uncomfortable. So,
so don't let them get hold of it, basically.
So they would roll it out tomorrow, I think, if they had the same. And you don't know how much it's just bumming up what they've got.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, but it was also during this. It was during this speech that he kind of wrote off Microsoft, and he said the only reason they exist is because of the flywheel of corporate sort of licenses.
Yep.
Which is so he thinks they're a dying breed, but they will keep going for, you know, another 10 years because
they will. I'm trying to do.
They'll keep going for a massive amount of time. I mean, you know, IBM are still a force in IT, even though they're
well, they've overtaken Microsoft now,
but they're. You know, so far away from, you know, the company that they were, you know, 20 years ago or whatever. But they're still a big company, and there's no way that you can write Microsoft off like that. They're just, I think that's a...
Well, they failed at mobile, but I mean, they're still the number one market share for home computers, and they're still the platform of choice enterprise.
And you look at Xbox and Kinect.
Xbox, for me, dominates. Kinect is probably the most innovative product of the last 2 years.
Yeah, so they do things quite well, but they're just doing quite a lot of things quite badly at the moment.
Yeah, the phone seems to fail, the tablet side of things.
I think it's too early to write the phone off completely. I think it'll do mediocre. I just think it's very difficult to get into that market, and their competitors are doing things better, basically.
I think they've pinned their hopes in Nokia, and see if the Nokia phone comes out and it doesn't get traction. What do you do? You know what I mean? What? You know, there's not many dice left to throw.
No. Okay. Button plague. What?
Oh, I just made up that title. I've no idea. Oh, you know.
I'm making up this.
Not relate at all.
Well, my shirt has far too many of them. I thought this was supposed to be a tech podcast, but no, he's talking about buttons.
He's off, Ian.
What did I tell you about the old medication? What did I tell you about the old man voice? There's just no need.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I'm sitting here saying I'm making up news. You guys must have heard of The Onion, which does make up news. But there's a website, I'm sure it's a Tumblr site, and it's listed all the people who believe the stories are real, and they actually comment on them about this is a disgrace and we must take the government to task over these things, not realising the stories are totally made up. So that's another one that I'll say that I've seen, and I won't put a link in the show notes, don't worry about it. Button plague. The like buttons everywhere, you know, so Facebook like buttons everywhere, and of course Google needs to do something, and Twitter are also doing something. So Twitter have launched the follow button, which is different to the tweet button, which allows you to tweet the page on your Twitter stream. The follow button basically allows you to follow the account of the page owner. So if I put the follow button in the sidebar in Digital Outbox, then you click on it and it would automatically follow Digital Outbox. And it would also tweet as well. So it does two things for one. Google have launched the plus one button for websites. Plus one launched 3-4 months ago. So in your web,
slowly rolling itself out, isn't it?
Yep. So in your web search results, you can plus one, and it goes into your plus one stream. And
but they also plus one also exists on sites as well. You get a plus one button.
So they've launched plus one for websites. You can slap the button on, and as you click on it, it'll appear in your plus one stream, which I think is in your profile, which nobody visits. So, Google really gets social. That was the other thing we were talking about. Google, just going back to that facial recognition, as far as I know, it's the only technology Google built and stopped. Buzz.
Yeah, wave.
Anyway.
I thought plus one was just what you got on some invitations when they didn't know if you were attached to anybody.
I need to bring back the sound effects just for you.
I mean, basically, for every two lines of blog post you do, you've got to have about four lines of buttons now.
Yeah.
Whoop-de-doo.
Just wait till we update the site.
Thank goodness that Delicious is falling off the radar, so their bun can disappear now.
Yeah, but I'm going to put a pinboard one in because I use it. And an Insta paper butter. It's all good.
Amazon have launched a Mac download store to try and, I guess, rival Apple's own store. They've got around 250 titles in it.
That's massive.
Yeah, including Microsoft Office, which the main Mac store doesn't have.
Is that just the one or title, or does that count as four?
I guess it's probably four, yeah. So it's got a clever way of downloading where you don't actually need to install. I guess it just downloads as the full app and is ready to go straight away. I don't know what you think. It doesn't sound like they're in any way attacking Apple Store because it's too small at the moment.
I think it's just saying to Apple, you're not the only one that can launch a Mac App Store.
It's just a digital download service, isn't it? You know, it's a digital download service for software, you know.
Which we're going to see more and more of.
Yeah.
But going back to Schmidt's, the four key companies, I mean, they said Amazon was for shopping, you know, so that I don't think they can...
Well, Amazon really are for shopping and infrastructure.
Yeah, but I think he emphasised the shopping. It's like he said for Apple, it was shiny. I think it was it shiny gadgets or best gadgets or best, you know,
beautiful
most
gadgets
beautiful
or
gadgets or something, which again was, I think, doing a little bit of a disservice. Google was, I can't remember what Google was. I'll find out. And Facebook was social, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I've gone off topic again, sorry. I am particularly rambling.
See, well, I know, but the thing is, I mean, staying off topic, but, you know, the thing with Eric is that, you know, you'd take him much more seriously if he actually seemed like he was taking his competition seriously. I mean, really, you just kind of rant and rave about, you know, just these kind of little asides, just little put-downs and things, and just dismiss them as anyway.
Amazon rules in shopping, Apple for beautiful products. Google rules and information, apart from when Bing beats them, and Facebook and friends and identity.
As an overall executive summary, it's probably about right. but basically, so this App Store, it's you can't submit your own applications to it at this time and things like that. It's kind of just a way of buying Amazon products, basically, isn't it? And getting them directly onto your Mac. And I don't think, you know, Apple aren't going to have to face any competition inquiries at this stage because their market share is still too low. But it is the kind of thing that if Mac, you know, if OS X takes off in a massive way, which it might do, if it reaches a teeter point, then they will have to open up their Mac store or, you know, at least offer you the way of getting these other ones. So them getting in the market now means that if that happens, I guess they can...
I think the only potential danger that happens if they ever merged iOS and Mac OS X,
which is people on talk the cards.
About. People talk about, it and I just don't know if it will ever happen. To be honest,
depends at what level that counts as being one operating system.
Well, I mean, it's already pretty much. There's not a massive difference between the two. Let's put it that way. In terms of architecture or in terms of developing for one or the other. Most of the frameworks and things are exactly the same. In iOS you find some that are slightly different. There's slightly different implementations, but, you know, you can see them moving towards the same, certainly the same base code. And that makes sense from Apple's point of view. I mean, they don't have nearly as many developers as Microsoft, for instance. And so to be able to have one lot of developers maintaining both makes a lot of sense.
It does to a certain extent, but I still have a big fear that, I mean, for me, then I think I would have to move away from Mac as my home computing platform. No, because I don't want it to be tight. You know, at the moment, if I was a walled garden around the App Store, I couldn't download the backup software I use, so I'd probably have to end up using, you know, Time Machine, which I don't want to use. And I know for a lot of people that's fine. and I'm probably in the minority, but it still make me look elsewhere.
No, I think you're confusing the two things though there, Ian, because I think that the fact that iOS, developing for iOS is a walled garden is different to actually having the whole thing being effectively the same operating system underneath.
No, but I mean, if I take the backup software, SuperDuper is the software I use, and it's not allowed in the Mac App Store because of, you know, the way it accesses certain things on the Mac so it can back up everything properly. No, so that's what I mean by, yeah, if you do end up in that environment where, you know, I can't install anything, it's not in the Mac App Store because that's how iOS works, which is, I know, is a big reach, but, you know, you can see them marching towards that, because when people talked about having a Mac App Store, some people were saying that'll never happen, Adobe won't put their software in it and blah, blah, blah. It's happened, you know, and the only thing that's odd is that they've never actually put any sales numbers out, which makes me think, how successful has it been?
Well, I think everyone used it to start with, didn't they? I mean, I haven't used
Twitter
came out. Because they're much bigger products, basically, on there. So, you know, it's a lot more money and it's not your throwaway 59p or whatever.
Certainly, if I'm buying a product, I kind of hope it is on the Mac App Store now, because I'm licensed for any machine. And if I get a new machine, I fire up the Mac App Store and just download everything I've bought.
Yep.
Makes it very easy.
Yep, sure. It does. Microsoft, they are making more money from Android. This is speculatively. Making
no,
more
it's
money
confirmed.
From Android.
It's confirmed.
Okay, confirmed.
It's confirmed. Get
more money from Android than they are from their very own phone. They apparently, due to a, I guess, another licensing spoke, intellectual property infringement.
It was a patent settlement.
So they get $5 for every single HTC phone running Android that gets sold. And they get roughly, I think, so it's between $7.50 and $12.50 for every, hang on, I'm going to get this wrong.
So the figures are from the website Asimco, who used to, a financial analyst, used to work for Nokia, now is very much a Apple focused, how is it doing against everybody else in the marketplace. And all he does is present fact, or he tries to present fact, and he tries to present it in a way that people can understand. But he did this, he put this post together that said that because Microsoft, he reckons, are getting $5 for every HTC phone, which was confirmed by an analyst in America.
Right, so it's not really confirmed, it's just analysts saying,
yeah. There's two things, because I knew one of you pedants would be like, hold on, it's an analyst. So he took the $5 and said, look, if you look at what HTC are selling, then and you look at what Microsoft have admitted selling, so it's 30 million Android HTC devices have shipped, then if you assume it's $5 per unit, then that's
$150 million.
Yeah, and Microsoft have admitted selling 2 million Windows Phone licenses, though not devices, and estimating that the license fee is $15 per Windows Phone, then they're getting 30 million from it. So his estimate, Microsoft get 5 times more income from Android than from Windows Phone, which did make me chuckle. And
easy money.
It is easy money. Charles Arthur for The Guardian actually did a bit of digging and said, how do we know this is true? So he got in touch with HTC and tried to get a quote, and all they would quote is that, yes, we have a patent settlement with Microsoft. We're not going to tell you how much, but yes, there is a fee that you have to pay for each Android device. So that to me is confirmed that at least they're making the payment. Whether it's 30 million, or sorry, whether it's 150 million, we'll never know. But
it's still, I know that's a lot.
It's a
lot
great
of money,
story.
In this world of all their billions, it doesn't sound like very much, does it? But still, I wouldn't sniff at it.
I just think it's great that they make more from Android than
it's funny, isn't it?
Than their own phone platform.
It doesn't matter to the shareholders.
It's absolutely.
Does it?
Oh, it does, because how much have they spent developing that Windows Phone platform?
And actually, they could have just not bothered and actually gone hell for leather to try and get push more more licenses.
So the shareholder will be sitting there and saying, okay, so if we don't bother having a Windows, we don't bother having a phone platform at all, we don't make any money from it, but we make more from Android, and we don't spend all that development and all the, I don't know, 1,000 people working on it or whatever it is they've got back at the ranch. Fantastic.
That would be a very quick way for them to stop her being a business, wouldn't it?
I'm a shareholder. All I care about is enterprise. All I care about is making money.
Yeah, future earnings important. Right. BT are going to
go
down
why they
the IPTV.
Skype.
Yeah. BT are going to embrace the IPTV.
Big hugs all round.
Yeah. So they are going to roll out multicast routers in their across their network effectively, and that will mean that at lesser bandwidth they can deliver high definition content to you down your internet wires. Sounds interesting.
Yes.
I don't know. Do you know anything about multicast? Because that's the kind of here.
But I don't really know too much about
Well, no, multicast. Multicast is that technology where what you're doing is you are, rather than every individual connection getting a point-to-point connection to the content that you're downloading, it's distributed. The frequently requested content is distributed to or multicast to different points so that you are... you're getting stuff much more locally, so you're not going further away.
And that was my understanding. Yeah. So if the three of us stayed in the same area of Glasgow and we asked for something from iPlayer right now, that's three separate streams. So it could be if it was a gig each, that's 3 gig that would get downloaded. If we asked for it on this as an IPTV stream, then it would be one stream is delivered and the three of us pick up that local stream. And hence there's less bandwidth used up, and also BT can then launch potentially lots of IPT channels over the same network.
Yeah, so you're not...
But isn't that just spreading the bandwidth around rather than... so it's ITV and you have to send it out once, or whoever, BT have to send it out once. But surely somewhere along the way it has to be split into three, unless there's the Sky model of box office where it just gets broadcast at specific times, and if you're listening to that
it doesn't. It's
I thought it was a format that you described. It is split up, but it's just sharing it around a bit more. But there is less on the main.
There's less on the backbone, which is the key thing. So that where the big pipe is, there's not, there's less video traffic on that because there's fewer channels on that.
It's a content delivery network.
Yep.
Distributing the content.
Yeah.
I guess like the iPlayer does to a certain extent by using the massive CDNs.
Yes.
And I think BT rolled out they've rolled out a content delivery network either late last year or early this year, so that I think they're putting that infrastructure in place as well.
But still, it's an interesting development. They're clearly going to go down that route. It's too expensive for them to do it.
But I'm sure. Was this not the thing that they talked about with Microsoft three, four years ago on Xbox and IPTV channels and watching your TV on your Xbox? Sure, it was.
But that's happened anyway, hasn't it? Basically,
Microsoft. I'm searching, by the way. IPTV.
Okay. iWork has hit the iPhone, so they have
2005. BT to use Microsoft IPT platform.
It's all right, Chris. He's still on the last story.
No,
I'm saying they talked about this 6 years ago and it's still not there.
It's still not done yet.
Yeah.
So, and they haven't put... Have they put a timescale on this?
No.
Next year.
They said in 2005 we hope to have it rolled out at the end of 2006.
Yeah, okay. So that... Yes, curb your enthusiasm. We might not see it.
Curb your enthusiasm isn't on BBC, is it?
isn't it over? I think it's only on DVD now. Yes, so let me try and spit this out. iWork have released a universal version of their software for iPhone. So basically the iPad and the iPhone version, they're one and the same thing. If you bought the iPad version before, you can now run it on your iPhone. And if you only had an iPhone, you can now install the software.
That's a lot of words for saying it's universal.
Yep.
That's what universal means, Chris. I thought you had an iPhone.
No, I don't.
I thought you did.
Yeah, he did.
I did.
Did being the operative word.
Okay.
So you've
downgraded, basically.
Something like that, if you believe the magical marketing.
Jump ship.
So, I don't know, have you either of you got iWork, and have you tried it on your iPhones?
Yes and yes.
Yes and no, because I had to switch my blinking phone off.
Is it tiny as you might expect, or is it quite usable?
I already had the apps for the iPad, and they were nice apps. It's nice that they're universal. I think for certain things, the screen is going to be small. I mean, the resolution's obviously there, but it still is small. But then I use a few Google spreadsheets on the iPhone. You know, so is it usable? Yeah, I'm not going to go and create massive, spreadsheets or, massive, documents. But
so usable in the sense that in an emergency or if you desperately needed to, you could do some amends or whatever. But you wouldn't really want to be doing creation and stuff.
And it's handy from, if you've got a keynote presentation, you can, take it, having that on your phone.
That really is nice. That really is awesome. I mean, what I still haven't tried is I do have the VGA connector for plugging right into a projector. Now, obviously, you don't get the mirroring on the iPhone 4. You only get that on the iPad 2. But I'm interested to see just how a Keynote works on an iPhone, because having that, being able to plug that into a projector, just having your phone around is really quite special, I think.
And the apps themselves are actually very, you could call them basic, but the way they've been put together is very, very nice. Even things like, when you're drag and dropping an image or you import an image and you get all the nice guides to say you're centered, are you aligned with other ones, can you resize to the same as these ones, it is all there and it works really well. And one other little thing as well, Shaq tried it and he found it were very unstable, crashed 5-6 times when he was viewing a document. Mine's has been solid, but he has jailbroken.
Uh-huh, I do wonder. Boy.
Well, I jailbroke as well, and I was going to put the article up online, but I had a massive freeze in my phone last week, and I was like, right, reset. I just can't be bothered. I see it as small gain to get the instability, it wasn't worth it, so I reset. But I still will put the post up, because there's some nice apps. Anyway, you're desperate to move on, so I'll shut up.
Only because we're up to 50 minutes.
Well, it's because you keep rambling.
I do.
And because you keep talking about the previous story, Ian.
Yeah.
One other thing, actually. I'm not doing it deliberately, honestly. But I reckon the iCloud stuff, this could be, I think this is a preempt of something next week.
I think you're right. We're definitely having iCloud, aren't we? So.
But that's part of the next story.
Docs is going to fall. Yeah, Docs is going to fall. Okay, games news. So Call of Duty Elite. Basically, Activision has come up with this clever idea, in inverted commas, to have a subscription service based on their Call of Duty games, which will effectively mean you pay maybe in the region of $5 a month and you gain extra stats, some sort of improved matchmaking sort of stuff. And
matchmaking
and some social integration.
Be careful, there still is matchmaking within the game itself, but this was kind of,
this is called matchmaking plus, basically, isn't it?
And the example they gave was you go through this this kind of different social network that they're going to build, and you can search for photographers and play a game against a group of photographers, and you're like,
woo.
What? I'm going to pay you 40-50 quid a year to do that.
So yes, not only do they expect you still to pay, the money for the game, but they're also expecting, like you say, 50 quid a year or whatever, more than that, to actually play with all the features that it should have come with in the first place. Until they actually give you a decent proposition, for example, had there been the dedicated servers involved, then you might think it's worth the $5 extra if you play it a lot, get a nice...
Well, that's a bizarre thing, because they dropped dedicated servers on the PC side, was it two titles ago? To a lot of the fans' displeasure, because you just took it on the console side. We've always talked about how it would be great to have the option and would pay extra for it. But there's nothing extra here apart from, some extra stats, which I still believe should be part of the game.
It's all pap. It's just all rubbish. I mean, the games that have put these community features in, Halo massively integrates it, and Forza whacked it in there. And how much do they get used?
Yeah.
They get used until you've got the achievements for the bits you have to use it for.
Don't say that to Stat Whore Bernie Lick. He's in there every day. Oh, 147,000 points till I rank up.
But you know, all this uploading videos and all that tosh, it doesn't work because it takes too long and it's just not worth the effort.
I think there's a generation that loves it. We are.
Are you sure though?
We're a bit older.
Getting too old.
Yeah, I think so, Chris.
I'm thinking of picking up Dirt, and I know Dirt's all got integrated YouTube uploading, so you can take your, you know, good bits of your rallying or whatever and upload them to YouTube. And all you need to do is look at what's popular on YouTube daily. It's still, there's a lot of Minecraft, but there's still a lot of Modern Warfare. There's still a lot of Call of Duty, which I know is the same thing. Still a lot of Halo, you know, and a lot of it is people uploading, you know.
And how much more precisely would you be prepared to pay if those features were removed and you had to pay to get them back in?
None.
Absolutely nothing. That's my point. You know,
I think for a certain... I mean, I've never been a massive Call of Duty fan. I'll play the game, but I've never been a massive, you know... I mean, even in Halo. I mean, Halo's had some extra... I'm trying to remember what it was. Remember they used to charge extra
the passport
for...
Plus to be able to upload more and do
yeah,
something.
It was uploading more videos, wasn't it? And also, you know, getting access to... You could do more maps or something. Not more maps, but it was you could do your own maps and share them and stuff like that, I think it was.
Basically, I mean, it frightens me in the direction that this is games developers are looking in everywhere, especially EA, looking every way to try and earn you more money. This idea that you have to use a code that comes in the box to unlock online is becoming very prevalent.
That's been adopted now, so Codemasters have done it for Dirt. So that comes with the online pass. If I sell you the game, you need to then go and buy, you know, pay 10, I think it's £10 to unlock the online again.
And I've seen it about four or five games now, I think I've seen it.
And I think, you know, if this is a success, EA will copy it for sure. I mean, their titles like FIFA, Madden, Tiger Woods, the ones that come out every year with an update.
Well, they already charge you for the, you know, unlock the full team and things like that. So they're already well into that kind of game.
Yeah, but see if EA turned around and says, see, instead of actually having to, you know, buy a title every year at £40 and we charge you maybe £40-50 just to subscribe to whatever the game is every year and you just download the latest updates. I could actually see me doing that.
Yeah, that's maybe more compelling.
But I don't want to get into the world of I'll buy the game every year and also I'll subscribe to your service every year.
£40 for the game, already quite a lot of money.
Yeah.
Plus another £40 minimum to subscribe for the year. You know, it's not going to work. I mean, it's not going to work.
So before we move on to the next bit, I've really messed you around tonight. I do apologise. Ellie Noir, how is it?
I think I'm in its sweet spot. I'm really enjoying it. I didn't get it to start with. It took me a while to get into it, and I kept getting things wrong, which frustrated me, especially when I got into a big loop and couldn't get out of it because I couldn't get answers right. But I am now into the swing of things and enjoying it. I've heard, our mate Paul, he's kind of got to the I'm a bit bored of this now stage, but he wants to get through it because the story's just about compelling enough.
And that's why I didn't pick up. I'm gonna get there. You know, my attention span is legendarily poor.
Yeah, but it might be a game worth, you know, it'd be a game worth hiring for. You know,
no, I'm going to get Dirt. Maybe a month. I'm going to pick up Dirt.
Which... I've actually picked up Dirt. I just haven't shoved it in my drive yet. I installed it. I just haven't played it.
Oh, I'll probably buy it definitely then.
But I have not. I can't comment on it other than it's got good reviews.
Shaq was going to buy it now that he's got a 360.
And, has he?
Yeah. He's got a Kinect. He's got a 360 and a Kinect.
Yeah, I've got a Kinect. It's a bit dusty.
Yeah, yeah. He's been loving the dancing.
Has he? He's been dancing as well, has he?
Yeah. He's a little shiny head all over the place. But he was going to buy Dirt, but it was because he thought Morrison's were selling it for £30, but they were selling it for £35, so he thought, no. That £5 made all the difference.
And they're trying to charge $5 a month to get stats. There we go. So upcoming, we're looking to next week. We're going to have why we've crammed all these stories in today is because we have got WWDC, Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, and we've got E3, basically. What are we expecting at the WWDC?
Go on, Henry.
No, you carry on, Ian.
We interrupted his snooze time.
No, he switched his phone on. He's been downloading Keynote.
No, I already had it downloaded. I just didn't quite have a chance to play with it.
Oh, dear. Well, interestingly, Apple announced this week what they're actually going to talk about their keynote. So it's going to be...
Which is very un-Apple-like.
Yes. So it's going to be Lion, which is the eighth major release of OS X. It's iOS 5, the next version of Apple's advanced mobile operating system, which powers the iPad, iPhone, and iPod Touch. And the brand new thing is iCloud, Apple's upcoming cloud service offering, which everybody's predicting will have the kind of music locker service and other things, and hopefully the end of Mobile Me, and I would love to not be able to pay for Mobile Me. And so I don't know what, and I've also said that Mr. Jobs is going to be there as well. I don't know if this confirms that we're not going to get any hardware, because they're just emphasizing that this is what we're doing next week, but they're always famous for their one more thing.
Yeah, and the fact that they've come out and said specifically what they are going to do kind of makes you think even more that they might do one more thing.
But the fact that the new iMacs at the start of the month, the fact that they reckon that next month or the end of this month they're going to do new MacBook Airs, the fact that things like the three apps came out yesterday or the day before rather than next week.
There can't be anything
else going on. Well, it just feels like... Go on,
yeah, I just think that they really are trying to get away from this. They do product launches in January, June, and September. So by pulling out of Macworld, by making a big thing of the software mainly for this. And this is a developers conference. It's not a hardware conference, but they just happen to have launched iPhones
for the last 4 years.
Exactly. And and September they've nearly always do an iPod refresh in time for the holiday season. But I just think they're just trying to get away from that really, so that they have more flexibility in terms of their manufacturing and
I guess they're kind of realizing they don't need to get into the kind of, EA and game manufacturing, churn the next one out each year if you don't really have anything to churn out. Because we have seen a couple of iPhone releases that hardly were worth it, really, or seemingly not that worth it. Maybe that's their thought on it. Wait till we've got something big to release and spend that a bit more time on it.
And there's E3, so there's lots to come out of E3.
So we're going to have new Nintendo... hardware likely.
Yes.
We're going to. What else is that?
There'll be a new PSP hardware. So that, and I know they've already. I mean, Nintendo have confirmed that they're going to show the new Wii. Sony will be showing the new PSP, which I know they've shown already, but they've not named and they've not put prices against it and actual release date. So I would have thought that would come next week.
And mainly because we're not that excited by it, but such is life.
Microsoft, there was a couple of very vague early rumours that says that they're going to have new hardware. I don't think they're going to have new hardware at all.
Do you think they might show the direction they're going to go in? I mean, you'd expect them to maybe do that.
I just wonder if this year's just going to be consolidate and connect and loads of games.
Yeah. I mean, Kinect hasn't moved anywhere really. There's a couple more games out for it, but there's not been a lot.
They've sold like 9 or 10 million.
Yeah, they've sold, they've sold shed loads of them, but it almost seems like, the games developers haven't caught onto it quite yet. And there must be a big releases on, there must be some big announcements on that front.
Exactly. I mean, it's like, I guess it was all first gen stuff. It was all first time people were playing with it. And you're going to see like an EA saying that, FIFA 12 comes with goalkeeper support for Kinect, so you can actually, do something, with your hands and save things. I don't know. I'm making that up, obviously. Clearly they won't have that, but I do think it needs probably more to get the likes of yourself back into using it.
They haven't got their killer apps yet. They haven't found the sweet spot of it, basically. Anyway, so that's all come next week. So I think that's all starting. It's the beginning of the week, sort of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. All that big news will happen. So we're likely to release another podcast about Wednesday next week. I would have thought maybe Thursday.
Maybe Friday. Who knows?
Who knows? whatever takes happen. It won't be Friday for me. I think.
I like the way we're arranging our next week's podcast instead of doing it via email. We'll do it on the previous week.
I think that's the way it should be.
I believe it's MotoGP at Silverstone, so I will be there.
Yeah, but it forces us into making commitments.
Yeah, let's not commit. We're not good at that. So let's move on quickly to our picks. I have a pick this week, and again, thanks to our friend Paul, he pointed me in the direction of a fairly old web video. It's called "The Website Is Down," and it's a fantastic insight into the world of a a systems architect and an infrastructure person. It's very funny. Anyway, have a look. You go to www.thewebsiteisdown.com, and specifically the episode I'm talking about is episode 1, and they won a Webby Award for this video. Have a look. It's funny.
Do you know what I mean? I had that as a pick one time.
Did you have it as a pick? No.
I just remember doing it. Is this... Yeah, the sales guy versus web dude, I think I might have.
Well, if it was a pick before, it's another pick now because it's that good.
No, it is. It's very good.
Henry.
Well, my app is called Polycord.
Polycord app. Have we lost him?
Are you there, Henry?
Can you hear? You probably can't hear that. I can hear it great.
He was trying to do a sound demo.
I'm trying to do a sound demo and it's not really working.
Oh, I can hear that. Yeah. I think you might have to send me the sound and I'll add it on after.
I think I will.
I can hear it.
I'll have to do the sound. Anyway, it's one of these music kind of creation apps which has a really interesting interface which makes it very easy to like kind of play along with stuff, particularly if you're like me and you wish you were musical but you're not really. So it's has a list of chords and the major kind of variations of chords round about the outside of a wheel on these different and it's got some kind of background stuff that it can do as well. And then on the right hand side, it's like got a kind of a keyboard, a touch kind of keyboard, with which plays notes in tune, which is quite which is quite something.
So it looks like you don't get an instrument or anything. You literally get these big buttons to press, which tell you what chord they're going to be.
Yes.
And it makes a nice chord from that.
It makes a nice chord, and they've got a little bit of background. So if you don't like the kind of the tubular bells kind of noise, which you get with it by default, the really cool thing is, of course, obviously, it's got like you can record all that kind of stuff if you want. And it's got SoundCloud integration, so you can just upload it to there. The first one that I did after about 20 seconds or something of playing around with the app is up there. Not that great, but great fun to play with is there. But it's got Wi-Fi MIDI integration, so you can play your MIDI devices. So you can plug it into GarageBand or Logic Pro. If you use something like Logic Pro, you have different channels it'll send for the drums and the bass and the chord and the strum. So it's been a lot of fun, and I've also got GarageBand, and I've been playing around with GarageBand. What I found with GarageBand was that some things that I'm playing along with love these kind of smart instruments that they've got there, but sometimes there's certain, you're looking for particular chords that aren't really there, and it's a bit more difficult to get something that, to find the things that fit in with what you're trying to play with. Where with Polycord they've really thought about how you would play this kind of live, and kind of integrate it that way. So it's really great for kind of playing live, whereas GarageBand is really great for kind of being able to build up lots of different tracks and things. So these are,
and how much?
It is $5.99.
Okay, so not insignificant in the app stakes, but not massive amount.
Exactly.
Okay.
Price of a good sandwich.
That's one thing that's been bugging me. I'm a sandwich person, yeah? And you're a sandwich person.
I said sandwich.
Yeah, but you say sandwich.
Yeah, but I speak proper and you don't.
Yeah, is that right? I don't know. It bugs me. I know loads of people that say sandwich. It sounds wrong.
Well, I just have a sarnie.
Yeah, exactly. Much better. Do you have a pick, Ian, for us?
No.
Okay. So that is the end of our podcast.
I'm tempted now to say yes, I do. Because that would just totally be what I've done all night. Sorry for being a cop.
And you've kind of done it again anyway. By proxy.
Priceless.
If you want to find out more about us, we are on digitaloutbox.com. And you can email us if you'd like at info@digitaloutbox.com. Twitter and Skype, we are on as Digital Outbox. You can find out more about me if you wish. Twitter is CheesyUK. Ian, where can we find out about you?
My pick this week is an application called Hype. It's my website's cnd.net. I'm on Twitter as Sweeper, and that's me.
And Henry.
You've really ticked him off, haven't you? He's really... okay, I'm ND.net. You can find me on Twitter as TalkRhubarb, and you might even find me on SoundCloud as TalkRhubarb as well, but that's really not worth looking at.
Well, no, but yeah, but we're all intrigued now.
You are. Well, it's the only way we're going to hear something after that demo.
That's true.
I think we should add it to the end of our podcast as an outro.
I'm sure, Henry, you'll send me some music at some point.
Yeah.
All right. All that remains of me to say thanks for listening. Well done for getting this far. And we will talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hello.
You deliberately try to wreck stuff, Ian.
No, I think it's the day I've had. See, all this talking about handling personal data has just got to me in the end. Honestly, it was good grief.
Good grief.
Good grief.
Go and eat a sandwich.
I've always said sandwich. The D just doesn't get there. I've never said Sarnie.
Sarnie.
Peace.
I've said peace. See, I'll go and get my peace.
You never get your peace.
I wouldn't even understand what you were talking about. You said that.
Well, if I go and get my peace.
I can hear music.
Because he's playing SoundCloud, aren't you?
Oh, it sounds like something on an Apple advert.
It does, doesn't it? I can feel the next Apple advert.
I've got Rolf Harris in his little kind of, what was it?
Yeah, I should have said that actually. It's just like that. It is absolutely. It's just that the quality of what was it called?
Was it stylophone?
Stylophone.
Is it?
It is a stylophone. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, it is stylophone. Do you know what it is yet?
I believe this is called Bing Bong.
I'm sure.
Well, it's a variation. I mean, what else can you call anything that's made with that kind of sound? It can't be anything else but Bing Bong or knock knock.
Oh, feel the bass. One. Today, Digital Outbox. Tomorrow, the world.
Beautiful.
Tell me, Chemical Brothers are going to be in touch.
to say if we ever see you ever again. You're right.
No, I think Chemical Brothers are in touch to see what some of your bing bong.
What have you been smoking, mate?
It is time to go and get apprenticed up.